You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Miss June. Trust me when I say that they're about to become your new favorite band. Hailing from New Zealand, Miss June are a group of jazz school kids who discovered Iggy Pop and never looked back. The brash, carefree approach to music might feel familiar, but what sets them apart is how clearly dedicated they are to their craft. On tracks like Best Girl and Twitch, you could tell that they're not a band that's here to mess around. On this episode, I had the band over my apartment during a recent New York trip. During our chat, they go into how the band came to be, and amongst many things, they share why being in a band is so important to them. This is the 405 Exchange with Miss June. Enjoy.
No room for this.
It's a bit of puku, puku. Yeah. As Night Dog would say, Night Dog would say, is that a bit of a puku? I was like, what?
So this is one of those episodes where we have more than three people, and it's always helpful to like have you lot say your name like one by one, so that way people can like associate your voice with who you are. So let's just like go around, kind of like we're back in school or something.
Yeah, let's do
it. Hey, I'm Annabelle. I play guitar and I sing in Miss June.
Hi, I'm Chris, and I play the bass.
My name's Tom, I'm the drummer.
My name's June, and I'm an alcoholic.
Who also plays guitar.
Yeah, who also plays guitar.
You don't even drink, you're such a liar.
Guys, thanks for making the trek over into Brooklyn. I mean, we're at my place now, it's raining, like, kind of mental outside, so I'm glad you're able to make it here, okay?
It's great to be in a nice warm spot.
Yeah.
Think of it having us.
We're actually staying in Brooklyn as well, though, so this is really close to us.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Yeah, and the venue you guys are playing at later, you and Pool, is relatively close. How have the last couple shows been going for you? Because, what, this is like the third of like three shows you have booked in New York?
They've been fantastic. They've really exceeded our expectations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're expecting a lot of stone cold faces, but people have actually smiled and clapped at the shows. It's been really good.
That's such an understatement, Chris. People have been like moshing, like throwing, open up the pit. It's been like phenomenal. Yeah. And they've been like fairly packed out as well. And just like lovely things. Like we had someone come to our first show, buy a t-shirt, and then the next night they came to our second show wearing the t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Having never seen us before.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fucking incredible.
Yeah, it's been really, really cool. Lovely.
The big thing I was keen on asking you a lot about is, you know, like listening to your music. It's one of those things where it's clearly very joyful, and what's grand to me is how much the energy comes through just on recordings. It's
cool.
Kind of like feral, it's kind of like in your face, it's kind of aggressive, but it's like really fun. I know people probably always ask about like how the band formed, but I'm more keen to ask about what that first rehearsal was like. Because I wonder how much of that energy was within the first time you guys were in a room together.
Go on, Jim, you can tell us.
I've told us so many times.
Okay, so like, you know, in jazz school, I was the good looking, handsome and Annabelle was like, you know, she needed a band, and she got these two, of course, because, you know, they're very good musicians. And then they were playing guitar, and then they went for a little break in the little break room, and then they saw me, handsome young lad. They didn't know if I could play guitar or not, but they were like, hey, we need someone who's front, who can really represent this band face-wise.
You know? Oh my god, James, this is terrible.
You're bad at stitching stories.
Okay, you go ahead about.
I mean, part of that was true. I had been booked for a bunch of solo shows, which I didn't want to do, as at that time I was young and nervous and hadn't played solo really in Auckland before, Auckland, New Zealand, where we're from. And then I wanted people to learn quickly, and I sort of knew Chris through mutual friends, and then he roped Tom in because we thought Tom was pretty snazzy, which turned out to be a really good choice.
Yeah.
And James was just happened to be in the room, sitting in the corner of the room. Somehow weaseled his way into our band, and then, I mean, literally, it's crazy to think that from that first rehearsal we're still the same for like the same original makeup. Like that is mind blowing.
Yeah, and in terms of the energy, I feel like we actually started out a lot calmer than we are now.
Oh, definitely.
Over the past few years, we've all acquired all acquired distortion pedals. The combination of those things has really like made us play a lot louder and more recently.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, because, you know, with hearing you say that, it's rare to hear it go the other way. What else do you think it was that changed? Obviously, trauma and distortion pedals, but like, what do you think it is that kind of led to this kind of like newfound aggression?
I feel like by playing lots of shows, we just ended up playing harder and faster, naturally.
I feel like probably maybe 3 years ago, we were actually more aggressive, more punky. It's only recently where it's become a bit more...
more like visceral almost in the way we play it as opposed to the sound.
I think it's more like we've matured a bit since then. Like, we used to be really... We did a EP release... in 2015 or 2016, and we ended up playing for like 14 minutes before we like broke all the gear on stage and like walked off.
I stormed. Oh, that was terrible. Yeah. I stormed off. Yeah.
I'm guessing this wasn't intentional, breaking all the gear on stage.
At this point, may as well
breaking the bass amps is never intentional, but it happens.
Yeah,
so
right.
I don't know. Thinking from then to now, where you know our set has a lot of it's quite eclectic. Lots of different parts for. You know, we've got the really intense parts, we've got the quite artistic, softer parts. I think it's come a long way.
You know, there's one of the things I really love about the music is that there's a bit of a sense of well thought out chaos, where I've used the word aggressive before, but I do feel like it's really well put together, and that I could tell that as much as you are a band in a live setting, you're very much also really good in the studio as well. I wonder if you feel like the way you play live has like directly influenced how you approach the studio, or does it still feel like two completely different worlds?
I think we started out as a quintessentially live band, and it can kind of go either way. Like, artists can start out in the studio and then think of how to translate their studio works into a live setting. Ours was definitely the other way around, which was like, how can we translate our live show into a recording? And it's taken years, and it's taken a lot of different techniques and like variations, and I mean, on one of our songs off the album, I've re-sung the entire vocals of it like 6 times or something, and that's like not just single takes, it's like full take and overdubs. I've done it like 6 times. It's taken years, but we're really fortunate that the producer that we work with, who is also our audio engineer, his name's Tom Healy, he works at the lab in New Zealand. He's just phenomenal, and he is like almost a fifth band member, so we're very comfortable in our setting, and it's almost like once that comfort and like trust developed, then we were really able to express what we do live.
It's also like changes between each song, like in saying that there are songs that have taken a bunch of vocal takes and we've gone in the studio for, you know, lots and lots of sessions, but then there's also ones on the album which we did one take of them, and maybe we did 3 takes in the live room and we used the first one, like Please Waste My Time, for example,
or like Scorpio, we used my tracking vocal
as the
actual vocal because it was just so raw.
So it's kind of just, it's just keeping an ear out for what's actually good. It doesn't, it just because it's the first take doesn't mean it's gonna be shit or gonna be great. It's like, we got really nitpicky in the studio, which
we're conscious though as well when we're doing that, like, when we're doing those drum and bass takes, like we play in the studio as though we are playing live. Like at the end of our recording, like Tom is exhausted from playing the drums. Like there's nothing left behind. No, like,
and then you take a 2 minute break and do it all again.
Going backwards a little bit, because I want to point out something interesting that you said. You mentioned how when it came to starting out in music, you had like these solo shows, but you didn't want it to like be a solo thing. Did it kind of come from a desire of always being, wanting to be in a band?
Not necessarily a desire to always want to be in a band. I do remember the first time that I realized I wanted to be in a band. I had seen the Mint Chicks, if they're a great New Zealand band, if you know them, play live at a festival in New Zealand. And I was about 16, and I went back to school and I joined a band. But prior to that, I had played a lot solo. I was really into folk and country and stuff. But the fact is that I've never been a technical player. I've never been someone that's really technically good. I've always been more of a songwriter and performer and, you know, lyricist and stuff. So for me, making a band was almost a means to an end in order to make better songs and better live performances and, like, sort of harness other people's talents that I don't have. Yeah.
I think that's what's really interesting, seeing how the band's developed up to this point, because, I mean, with the songs that you've released most recently, I'm going to be getting into those songs, it is so much of, like, a band force where, like, you could, my favorite type of bands, like, I think of bands like Mets, Die Die Die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those guys are freaking wicked. And so
shout
I watch,
out Mets, those guys are the best.
Wait,
well,
shout out
Die
Die
Die.
Die.
I love those guys too. There's a band from Northern Ireland called And So I Watch It From Afar. They're really sick as well.
Oh, yeah.
And what I love about those bands, I feel like you guys have this too, is that each instrument can be heard and it doesn't feel like it's like a clash to be heard. That's like
yeah.
a really cool thing to have in a band.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, the first tune of yours that I heard was Best Girl. I instantly fell in love with that one. Do you remember what it was like working on that one?
Phil? It's the most recent song that we've done. So, as far as our songs go, I feel like I can remember working on it more than the others. We spent a bit less time on that one than some of the other ones, right?
No,
I don't know. Did
we?
We
spent so much
yeah.
more time
actually,
on that song.
We did. I'm such bad memory.
Any other song.
We actually did spend so much time on it.
We spent so much time
was
on that
painful?
Song.
No.
Try
it
to get
was
that
painful.
Chorus and that
oh
bridge because
But hey, we've almost got it.
Yeah.
So just a little bit more work and we'll get it.
Honestly, that's the song on the album that's taken the most time out of all of them.
Apart
from Enemies.
Nah,
Enemies
nah,
wasn't that
nah,
long.
Enemies
wasn't
that
long.
Do you reckon, Tom?
No,
yeah.
Absolutely.
It's taken the most time, like, getting the feel of it right. We've gotten it mastered from two different people.
Yeah.
Like, we've got synths in there and BVs that we never intended to have, but through the process of recording it became almost like essential in creating the dynamics that we wanted in it.
Yeah,
we tried everything. Like,
we
tried
everything.
Because like, we were so unsatisfied with the chorus and the bridge.
There were times we went into the studio and James just went in there for like 8 hours on his own just doing like the most random shit
just,
on guitar, right?
Just
like, you were just like, let me just try every pedal and
like
every
written,
noise
yeah,
and
I've
every
written, like,
everything.
Four solos for like the
bridge. For the
bridge,
yeah.
And they took it all out. And
yeah.
it's like,
yeah.
And then I had to do another four solos and then they took out bits of that. And it's like, what's going on? You know, I've just worked, like, you know, it's just so much. And we've added, Yeah, it just never sat right for a long, long time. That's the best. That's what I love about this band as well. I sometimes fucking hate about it. But sometimes we'll sit on something, we'll listen to it 6 months in, then 6 months later, and we'll just be like, well, let's just change something, you know? Like, but we'll sit, you know, it has to sit right before we are happy with it, you know? And sometimes that could take months, you know? We might have it all done, but we might sit with it and it just doesn't feel right. We don't. You know, sometimes you don't know what's wrong with it, so you just got to keep putting in the screwdriver and start working it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, it sounds really interesting to me with the way you just talk about that is how it seems to be very much like a unanimous type of thing where it kind of seems like you guys are really good at coming together and agreeing when you're unsatisfied rather to being like a 3-4 or 2-2 type of situation. Yeah.
No, we're all extremely pedantic in our own ways.
Yeah.
Good use of the word.
Yeah. Oh, we've used it lots, and other people have used it to describe us.
I think our producer called us pedantic.
We are just stupid. Like, I'll hear things where I'm like, I'm not happy with that. And Tom and Jen will be like, I don't hear that at all, but if you're not happy with it, you change it. And then, you know, like one of Tom's notes on the single was like, we're not going to release it because there is a snare sound at 0.22 seconds, which is just a little bit tinny. Like those are the sort of notes that we'll spend
weeks
fixing.
Like, yeah, like push this one guitar note back by like get the ruler out and push it by like half a millimeter, like just so it sits right in the
We're
pocket,
not even exaggerating
like.
Either, like it's ridiculous.
But what's really cool about that is I think so many people could like hear the music and mistake it for being something that was like structured simply or just like kind of being a thing of like reckless abandon. So
simple is hard, dude.
Simple
the
is the hardest
simplest
thing you ever do.
Songs are the hardest.
And like you see, like you know, trying to give, it takes a lot of fucks to not give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it takes a lot of fucks to make it sound like we don't give a fuck.
That's probably the pull-out quote.
And the thing with, like...
Oh, it's a Dillinger quote. Shout out to Dillinger's cake plan. You know?
Thing with, and that's the thing with Best Girl that we said with it is, like, the big, like, the only real shift in it is a key change. But aside from that, it's an incredibly simple song. And so trying to make that dynamic and have feeling and interesting... Yeah, it's more difficult than a song that's been written with an A section, B section, C section, back to A section, back to C section with a D section, and then back to finishing on B, like Enemies.
With an extra bar before the last B, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
3/4 somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, the music geeks who are listening are definitely feeling very happy right now. I want to ask about the music video to Best Girl, and I'd really implore people to check this music video out because along with hearing the song for the first time, it was also a thing where I saw the video to it as well. That was like my first entryway to you guys. And it's a really hilarious and well-made video. I'm more curious to find out what were those conversations like prior to you even shooting it? Like, do you remember what it was like when you were coming up with the ideas and the concepts behind this?
My poor car.
Is that your car?
Yeah, why did I agree to that?
So many dents
on the roof. I had to replace the windscreen. There's a huge crack down it. Hey, but it was worth it.
I mean, it does look really sick. I mean, for people listening who haven't seen the video, you can infer that a car gets totally kind of fucked. And it's your car. Yeah, shit.
It was really the vision of the director, Chilita, who's a young Thai New Zealander, and just creative in so many different areas. Like, I have a lot of respect for her, and she really pioneered the idea. Mm-hmm. She was like, I want it to be one shot, no editing, and I'm not going to ruin it for anyone that listens to it, but we brainstormed ideas for what would develop throughout the one shot, and she was really the one that thought of most of what happens in it, and then I sort of helped with a few other ideas, and then we really got our own crew involved, so most of the people in it are friends, and the people that worked on it like James's partner worked on it, the guy who first recorded Clyde, our first ever singles in it.
Taekwon.
Oh yeah, Jun's best friend was our pyrotechnics guy. It was filmed in my best friend's brother's backyard. It was just like a real family affair, which is what we wanted. We wanted like a really New Zealand feel.
Yeah,
you know, everyone loves the cat.
The cat.
I didn't even realize the cat was there until I watched the video. Months after we did it. Like,
oh, it's so good, and because then it runs off and it just sits there for like a little bit of the video.
We didn't even like there wasn't a plan at all. The cat just came out of the house and just sat in the front
of the video.
I love hearing how it came together because the vibe that I got from just watching it and then like with the song as well is that it felt like the director very much understood the vision of the band and really much got it. Like, I thought that was really cool.
Chilita has... The first time I ever met Chilita, she snuck into one of our shows when she was only 16.
That is awesome as hell.
Yeah, so she's... And she probably, you know, would not... She's a very cool person, so she'd never admit to being a fangirl, but... We know the truth.
Shout out to her if she's listening.
Yeah, and shout out to Britt, who produced it as well, who's Chilita's best friend of a long time, who I've also known for ages as well.
Yeah.
So it's a very female-heavy crew, which I always prefer for our music videos.
That's mega. Another recent song of yours is Twitch. It's a very fun song to listen to, and I'd love to hear a bit about the process in this one. Was this another one that took a really long time to come together, or...?
I don't really recall it taking that long. Like, this is one that started off with Annabelle bringing it into the practice space. We were still at jazz school, I think. We were rehearsing there. And it was originally, you know, on an acoustic guitar, singing it, and she played it, and I was like, that's really nice. Like, it's really, really nice verse, really nice chorus. Let's fuck it up.
I feel like the hardest process of writing that song was remembering which section was called, like, because we named each of the sections something.
Yeah,
like, this
is
A, this is B, this is C, this is C1,
C2. Yeah, I remember
that was
that.
The hardest part about writing
that
song. Because we arranged it and we just, like, couldn't remember what the fuck was going on for a while.
Yeah, we love whiteboards.
yeah, that was definitely a song that I had from start to finish. Also because I had played it acoustically at the med school in our cadaver lab at the end of our cadaver sessions.
That's really awesome. You know, I'm kind of curious because, you know, considering like your background in the jazz school and also like what the type of music you make now, I mean, I'm sure people always talk about like that contrast, but what was it like kind of having like classmates and like your parents and stuff coming to those first ever Miss June shows? Do you remember what was that like?
My parents have still never seen me live.
Really?
Yeah, my mother throws a towel every time she hears I'm doing a show and she goes, where the fuck am I going to be invited?
You would assume she would understand that she's the mom, but she always has like a point in the
conversation. I tell her not to come. I'm like, no, ma, you don't want to watch this shit.
But like, did you ever have, was it ever weird having like, I mean, maybe I'm just assuming that like in the type of school you guys went to, there were like people who were like very prim and proper about things. Like,
I mean, there are.
Tom was one of those people.
Yeah, you certainly were.
You were full jazz.
I remember the first time I played you Iggy Pop on like the second rehearsal we had ever done. And I will never, ever forget this. You said, I have no idea why anyone would listen to this shit. Like, you were so anti.
I've never heard that in my life.
Another funny story is feedback. He used to hate anything with feedback and screeches or whatever. And he used to hate it. And then now he's in Wax Shadows, which is like, you know, like one of the biggest feedback kings. You know,
I remember using a distortion pedal on one of our early gigs, and afterwards Tom has a word for me and he's like, what was that pedal you use? It sounds like shit.
Hey, at least I'm honest.
But the cool thing about hearing that is like, and this is kind of like from the outside orbit, like of music fans, like me who aren't in bands. I think like we always kind of envision that when you get into a band, you end up influencing each other and kind of like showing each other your stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, like if I could play guitar the way I want to, it wouldn't sound like Miss June. I don't know. Yeah.
That was just completely off topic. But yeah, I made these guys like a mix CD when we first got together. None of them listened to it. I tried for years to...
Guys, is this true?
Yes.
I don't remember.
Yeah, like none of them listened to
CD?
It.
Yep.
I don't remember getting a CD.
I had a good... Because I was dating Andrew from Die Die Die, actually.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, he introduced me to Paul Carruthers. While we're in the process of giving Tom shit. He introduced me to Paul Carruthers, who makes these fantastic pedals in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Called... like hotcakes and prunes and custards, and I remember trying to tell each of you to get one, and you were like, nah, I don't like them at all, and now every fucking time we play a show, someone comes up to Chris to ask him about his prunes and custard and his hotcake. No one ever asks me, but I always ask Chris. So there you go.
It's because I do it better.
You do it pretty well, like I'll give you that, to be fair.
I'm going to jump back into the music a bit, just going a bit more into Twitch. There's also a really great video that you guys made for this one. And what I really loved about it is that it's very tongue-in-cheek. And I feel like what I get the vibe from that video in contrast of everything else is that definitely seems to be something that you guys love. Kind of like having a bit of a, like lyrics that can like ebb on the more emotional or like serious undertone of things, but everything else being kind of like tongue-in-cheek and fun. Am I kind of right in thinking that a bit, or is that kind of like a way too heady way of looking at it?
I think in terms of the video, we were trying to do it serious, but then none of us, all of us are bad at acting, except maybe Annabelle. And so we couldn't help but come across as funny.
Really?
Yeah.
That was like completely unintentional.
Yeah. Same with Twitch. Twitch was meant to be a very serious video.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
I thought we were talking about baseball, sorry. But yeah, just, you know.
It's meant to be serious. Tom, I mean, like, James nearly died in it, right? So that's pretty serious, but it just ended up being funny, which is cool. I guess
it's funny because it's like, I'm watching James try to...
Nah, people have told me that it's funny.
No, it's like comical. Like, no. I didn't even Yeah.
I think it's just because our personalities can't help but come through.
We really struggle to be serious, even on stage. Like, yeah, we're supposed to be these, like, hardcore fucking musicians, and we're just
standing up
so
there cracking up.
Well, my thing is, like, take the music serious, but don't take yourself serious.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree with that.
Mozart said it quite like that.
Did he?
Yeah.
Cool.
I feel like that's the general vibe I'm getting with you guys, especially when I was hearing about you guys talking about how these songs come together. Like, the fact that you approach it so seriously, I think it's refreshing hearing a rock band talk about it in that way. Especially, you know, the background that you guys clearly have in understanding theory. That's cool that you can apply it to, like, what a lot of people would find to be quite simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wanted to ask next about I Don't Want to Be Your Dog. I, like, listened to performance.
Oh,
that
was so.
Yeah. And, you know, the track just reminds me of, like, pure energy, and it's just, like, shows how great a simple punk song could be. We released this one quite a long time ago. How do you find yourselves feeling about that song today?
That song's kind of disappeared from the set list.
We've
played it maybe once or twice in, like, the last year.
We played it
twice
this year. We played it once at Splore.
Mm.
And then we played it once somewhere else.
I actually really enjoy that song.
It's really cool.
I really like playing it. I don't know why it's gone.
Yeah, I feel like
it's tonight.
We should. I feel like Tom was saying earlier about how it used to be a bit more raw, like our set, and it's matured a bit. I Don't Want to Be Your Dog is kind of more reminiscent of how we used to be, in terms of the punkiness.
And yeah, it's funny, it didn't make the album either.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it on the whiteboard forever, and then, like, on the last couple of weeks just kind of got the...
Because the thing is, it was the way that it got released is it was a demo that I found in my Dropbox.
Really?
It was one we did with James Goebbels.
Yeah, we recorded it a long time before we released it.
Like before
about
the EP even.
Because we released.
Oh, no, it's after.
We recorded that
after
and. Come through at the same time in Wellington.
Mm.
And we did Sink Slink.
Yeah, that's right.
Which are all unreleased, unheard songs. And then, yeah, we just thought it was cool and. We had someone who really wanted to make a music video for us. I don't know if you've seen the music video for that song.
No,
it's so sick.
Yeah,
it's my
really
favorite
good.
Music
it's
video.
It's the same here.
Yeah. After Best Girl. I love Best Girl the most, but this video is so sick.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out after this.
It's like animation.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
It made me like the song more.
Yeah,
it's
like the
same.
That's cool in your own videos to do that. I have a couple more questions for you, but I'm curious to know... And it's kind of funny, I don't even know if you guys could talk about... You guys could talk about the album then, and, like, what's on it, what's not on it? Or is that kind of, like, a bit...
Ask a question and we'll see.
Yeah. I was going to say, has Drew made it onto the album?
That was on the EP, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Drew's on the EP. All
right, nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we're going to keep it on the EP.
We actually did have some discussions about, you know... things from the EP featuring on the album, or do we re-record them if we want them to be on the album? And
or do we just chuck the whole EP after like a 3-minute silence in the end?
Just for the Japan deluxe
edition.
I think we kind of decided to leave it back then. You know, that was Miss June in 2015. That was like kind of like a little timestamp and. What is that? A little stamp.
Yeah.
What do you call it?
Stamp of time,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you want to listen to it, it's just as easy to listen to, you know? It's like, it's just on Spotify next to the album. It doesn't need to be in the album, you know?
No,
also,
so,
the thing is, we had so many songs for the album that we actually cut down already.
Yeah.
New stuff. So, trying to add... Because the thing is, Drool's cool, but like, my personal favourite song off the EP is Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really like trying to pick between your children, and we just decided.
Yeah,
and what
I like,
Anxiety wasn't even going to make it on there.
Oh
Anxiety.
Yeah, but I like you know, for me now, like after recording the album, listening back to the EP, and just hearing a development of that sound, you know, that like that was Miss June in 2015, and I can't wait to release the album and listen back to that when we're. You know, when the second album's finished, and be like, whoa, look how far we've come since that. Like, I'm really, really excited for that to happen too.
Yeah, it's gonna be sick. You know, before I let you guys run here, tell me, like, in regards to just the experience of making an album, I always love asking this, and you know, you get a different answer each time, but like, what would you say surprised you the most about just that experience? I mean, you guys got to do that, and
just how like fun it is. Like, you know, like, not only is playing fun, but making an album is fucking fun too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like...
I kind of know what you mean, eh? Like, going into the studio is fun.
So much fun. It's hard. It's always hard. Mm-hmm. It's always hard work, and it's always like a, you know, it's always a tedious process and whatever. But it's always fun, you know? At least for me, it's always just fun. It's like cool. It's like...
It's like, what are we going to do today?
Yeah.
Like, what can we do? Like, this is... Yeah.
And Tom Healy always makes it fun for us, our producer. He'll put on like a trap beat and we're like, and we'll dance
little, yeah, little breaks from our stuff and we dance around.
And
we're
always joking and talking shit, so it's always fun, I think, you know. And that's what I realized, was like, this is such a fun process. That's what I realized.
I think also, working with Tom Healy as producer engineer is like, he was very influential. And not just like in his voice and the music, but also just like his approach to recording, like, and how you do takes and how you listen back to them, and how you take breaks or what tea you drink or whatever to like kind of chill out. Because we've all our recordings have been very much like, or all the writing process just us four up until, you know, the album. It's like we don't really consult any outside sources, but with this one and working with Tom Healy, I really enjoyed that. Yeah, he was truly inspirational.
You're right, isn't it? It really was a process in understanding how close a relationship with a producer and an audio engineer can be. Without 40, there'd be no me.
Yeah.
Without Tom Healy, there'd be no Miss June.
Well, guys, thanks for taking time to chat. I better let you guys run, because in about, 2 hours' time, we're going to be on stage or so.
Yes.
Okay, thank you going. Guys, thanks so much for taking the time to chat, really.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you.